John, this one's for you.
Black Sabbath is a band synonymous to the heavy metal movement. I mean, they invented the genre after all. Every heavy metal band ever can trace their roots back to Black Sabbath. The second Tony Iommi lost his fingertips in that accident and decided to downtune his guitar to compensate for his injury, heavy metal was born and the music scene forever changed. With so many iconic songs, it's hard to ignore Black Sabbath. I mean, their music can be found all over movies and other media, from Paranoid in Days of Confused, Iron Man in School of Rock.
And you pluck along with me, okay? If you can.
Or Time Machine in Wayne's World. Or Iron Man in Guitar Hero. Mob Rules in Heavy Metal.
To the Council Chamber!
Or even in, well, Iron Man.
I am Iron Man.
Funny story, but a friend of mine thought that Iron Man was written for the soundtrack of the Iron Man movie. When I showed him the song was written 35 years beforehand, he was surprised, claiming how modern it sounded. And that's the case with a lot of their music. Music and media aside, the band's fame is paralleled by the solo projects the band would spawn in the future, with lead singers Ozzy Osbourne pursuing a very successful venture into a solo career after being fired, and the band hiring then-rainbow vocalist Ronnie Dio to replace him, only for Ronnie to form his own band soon after called Dio. Both of these vocalists brought a different sound to the mix and completely different styles, and for years many fans have debated over which era of Black Sabbath is better. Whether it is the Ozzy era that saw the very fabric of metal being created, or the Dio era that found the band entering the 80s in a more refined and arguably more successful than ever. So I thought, with Ozzy having released his latest album Patient Number 9 not too long ago, and Dio never really fading away, and with the debate as fierce as ever, it would be perfect to focus this episode of Retro Review on a Black Sabbath record from the Tony Martin era.
They'll tell you exactly who you are.
So, I think it's important to discuss the history of this lesser-known album, as many Black Sabbath fans may have forgotten this era, or might not even know of it. After all, if you only access Black Sabbath through Spotify or Apple Music, only one of his 5 albums he recorded with the band is accessible on these platforms. It's odd, especially considering Tony was the second longest-serving singer of Black Sabbath. Most of this has to do, of course, with record labels, contracts, and the usual shitstorm related to licenses on streaming platforms. You see, Tony Martin joined the band amid a chaotic couple of years in Black Sabbath's history. Dio's era with Sabbath was short, but very successful, but he would leave us to focus on his newest venture, creatively called Dio. So this left Black Sabbath without a singer for the second time in 3 years. They will be joined by Ian Gillan of Deep Purple fame for their 1983 album Born Again, but this venture was less than fruitful, as Ian's songwriting was more grounded in reality and regaling stories from his perspective, rather than that murky, ambiguous, dark presence of evil that their previous members captured so well. I mean, he didn't even wear leather or nothing. That was like the cornerstone image of metal in the 80s. Deep Purple would also reunite around this time, with Ian rejoining the band on their 1984 album Perfect Strangers, so you know there is that. And so Black Sabbath would go on hiatus for a few years. Tony Iommi would record a solo album in 1986 and pushed by record execs to be under the Black Sabbath name, but this record really is his own, especially without longtime bass player Geezer Butler on the record. It's also worthy to mention here that Glenn Hughes would perform vocals during the tour of the Seventh Star album, and he was another former Deep Purple musician who was part of the Mark III and Mark IV lineups, recording Burn, Stormbringer, and Come Taste the Band. I have done a timeline to the Deep Purple members if you want to see this video. Ray Gillen would take over vocal duties during the tour after Glenn Hughes was fired and eventually joined the Black Sabbath lineup, writing for their new album Eternal Idol, but he would leave before finishing his vocals to form the band Badlands. So a new vocalist was once again required. This time they were introduced to Tony Martin, who would re-record vocals for the Eternal Idol album and thus become Black Sabbath's newest vocalist. Interestingly enough, the Ray Gillen version of Eternal Idol still exists and is available on Spotify to those that are interested in hearing the comparison. Tony Martin was now in the band, but there was a small problem. They were without a record label after being dropped by Vertigo after 18 years with them. Luckily, they didn't have to wait long before signed with IRS Records. The band rounded out the lineup with longtime Black Sabbath keyboardist Jeff Nichols, Cozy Powell on drums, who had performed with Rainbow, Gary Moore, Robert Plant, and Whitesnake. They were also joined by session bass player Lawrence Cottle, who worked with the Alan Parsons Project and Eric Clapton on his 1986 album Autumn. There is a special guest on here too, but I will raise that later. So, with the members ready and a record label behind them, the band was ready to write their 14th album, Headless Cross. The Gates of Hell serves as the introduction piece to the album, some darkly omnipotent piece with voices that have been warped and slowed right down, set over some keyboard sections. It does well to set the mood of the album. The first real song from this album, and it's certainly an ominous start to the album with that guitar riff, but here we have one of the singles from this record. It's just a basic drum pattern intro with a somewhat generic intro riff played out. Now, this song does well with the other instruments, guiding the song as Jeff and Lawrence really keep the melody on this track between Tony Iommi's guitar, which is absent during the first few verses. The bassline is a simple yet effective one, playing the same note in triplets, but the keys add the atmosphere during the non-guitar part. I read that this song was inspired by a myth set in the Headless Cross location south of Birmingham, which a small group of people went to pray to God during the plague and none of them returned. But I couldn't find the original interview as the link source was dead, so source needed, I guess. Regardless, the setting is there and is open to interpretation for Tony to weave his tale of what may have happened. And given the lyrics are dark and mention how there is no escape from the power of Satan, it certainly falls in line with the Black Sabbath motif. This track feels like a classic 80s era Sabbath song, with Tony's powerful vocals piercing through this song as he soars higher and higher. It's a great tune to open this album with. So this is the lead single from the Headless Cross album, and where the previous song may be more in line with a slow Sabbath tune, Devil and Daughter mixes it up with a faster paced piece. The song is an interesting one as it talks about former Black Sabbath manager Don Arden and his daughter Sharon Osbourne, who of course would manage Ozzy Osbourne after being fired from Black Sabbath, and of course we all know married him. This is some fourth wall breaking shit. Almost fifth wall, really. It's crazy when you think about it. I mean, Black Sabbath had discussed real world events on songs like War Pigs and Fairies Wear Boots, but this takes it to another level. The songwriting is on point here and uses many double meanings in its lyrics, such as devil and daughter. He's got the power and she's got the pain, which could be interpreted literally, or it could allude to the story of Sharon suffering a miscarriage when she visited her father and was attacked by his dogs. This event led to the both of them losing contact for 20 years. Besides all this, the song itself is a pretty decent song with a good and catchy riff and a solid bassline that thunders along throughout. Devil, This song has a power ballad feel right from the opener. Slow and soft guitar notes play out over a small string arrangement, and Tony sings his lyrics with an almost softly spoken part. Of course, this is Black Sabbath and we can't have any of that. So by the time the song title comes into play, we are off to a kickstart, and it goes into a higher gear with that heavy riff. The song does go back to its softer parts during the verses, but it changes for the chorus parts. When the song gets to its build-up and changes tempo, it takes on a new feeling, and the beast of Sabbath feels like it's awakening here, like some old-school Sabbath. What is perhaps most interesting is the guest guitarist on this track, with Queen's Brian May performing the solo on this song. Now, I have tried to find out how the two met, but apparently being British helped. Also, the fact that they were both influential rock artists in the 70s and 80s also helped. Iommi said once he couldn't recall his first meeting with Brian May, but it was in the 70s, and of course, guitarists flocked together to discuss guitar-related shit. One story has it, during a recording session, Iommi asked May to come visit and jam with the band, and eventually, the two did jam for so long, in fact, that the band just left them in the recording studio. Talk about wanting to be a fly on the wall. The duo would continue their bromance and are still close friends, with Brian stating he was nearly brought to tears when he saw Iommi back on stage with Ozzy. Eager fans of the duo would be pleased to hear they recorded some material in 2018 as well as before the lockdowns, but it has yet to be released, with Iommi stating in an interview with Louder Sound in February of 2021, it would be nice, but citing Brian's busy schedule as a delay for such plans. This song kicks off with the drums pounding away, and given the themes within this song, it may have worked a bit better to have a bit of an atmospheric intro, given the song is talking about ghosts and one of them being killed as the protagonist feels his blood go cold. It's an interesting theme and fairly decent lyrics, but I have to say, this song feels like it wants to be a pop rock song. You see, the song isn't heavy or nasty, and it plays fairly safe with the riffs on offer. Even the bass line is a simple one, playing staccato notes on rhythm, and to be honest, it kind of annoys me. I think it would suit the song a bit more if it just left the bass line stay in a fluid style until the part where Tony kicks up the lyrics when he says, "There's been a kill in the spirit world," right before the solo. I mean, at least when Iommi lets it rip, the bass line flows, and it sounds much better at this point. But alas, I am not the writer here, and Sabbath did what they wanted. I guess they thought it wasn't a strong song either, as during my research I found that Black Sabbath have not played this song live at all, not even during the tour for this album. On the subject of staccato bass lines, yes, this song sees a return to this style. Now, I think it is time to take a brief pause to discuss Lawrence Cottle. It's worth mentioning that Lawrence was the youngest member of the band on this album. At 29 years old, amongst a band of incredibly talented musicians and filling the shoes of Geezer Butler, arguably one of the finest bass players to play the four-stringed instrument in the metal scene. So, he has some very big shoes to fill. Now, Lawrence comes from a jazz-playing background, with his only previous studio work before recording this album being on the 10th album by the Alan Parsons Project called Gaudi, which is a progressive rock and new wave sound, which saw mixed reviews upon release, but I think his bass works better there than it does here. As mentioned before, he also worked with Eric Clapton on his album August, in particular on the track It's in the Way That You Use It. I'm not sure how or why the band or the producers thought this would be a great mix. The bands are completely different. Some might argue that singer Tony was about the same age and also had little experience, but he did have a background in this genre of music at least. After all, he was called on to re-record the vocals for Eternal Idol, and the band were blown away by his performance that they asked him to become a member. Say what you will about Tony, but at least he was a very good fit for Black Sabbath. Lawrence, on the other hand... So we get back to this song, and this song kind of suffers the same fate as the previous one, with some sporadic guitar riffs playing out, allowing more space for Tony's vocal. The song also incorporates an electric Eastern vibe in parts of it, which I like. It changes up the song a bit at least. There's also some nice muted pinch harmonics in the song, which adds a real flair to it. The drumming here is on point, of course, with some ferocious and energetic fills during the hero parts, but the best part of this song has to be the lyrics, of course. Tony has a knack for telling an ambiguously open story, which is left open for the listener to interpret. This song was initially a B-side to their song The Shining from the Eternal Idol album, and does get a lot of things right. I managed to find this video on YouTube, but I can't tell if this is the original video clip or a fan-made one. Suggestive. It's pretty good if it's a fan-made video though. If that's the case, I have no idea what the movie it is referencing, but it seems to be a nice fit. The song itself has a solid riff to it and feels like a real 80s Sabbath vibe. This has a real solid groove throughout the song. I like the solo. I mean, it's not over impressive or a face melter, but suits the overall musical theme of this track. I think I might have found a new Sabbath song I haven't fully appreciated here, and I'm glad that I've listened to it. Truly underappreciated song. Nightwing is an interesting song. It's a slow build-up piece with an acoustic opener, but led by the ever-energetic Cozy Powell on drums, playing his powerful lines to guide this song into the next section, and it really shows how Cozy Powell was a really good fit for Black Sabbath on this track. This drum line really helps the next section when Naomi rups from the gates to play a very doomy riff. The song plays between acoustic and electric sections that drone along, but when the song changes tempo, you know something is about to come up, and the solo plays up, with one majestically short solo. This song doesn't need a 2-minute long finger-bleeding section, and Naomi does return later, but it's more rhythmic and fits this suit well. Also, a terrific fade-out as the band blows up, and a great way to close out this album. Overall, I feel this is one solid effort by a band that was battered and bruised and many had given up on. I would score this album at 4 million chilies on the spicy scale, with my favourite tracks being When Death Calls, Black Moon and Nightwing. I feel like I have stumbled upon a time capsule here, a real message in a bottle if you will. It was great to go into this review knowing my ears are but a virgin to any of these songs, unlike, say, the first 5 albums, which I have played countless times over and over again. It was a fresh take to a band I thoroughly enjoy on an era I know very little about. The late 80s and early 90s era of the band are shrouded in a fog of mystery due to, in great part, not having these albums been available to hear on Spotify or Apple Music, hint hint, and mostly been overshadowed by the band's larger-than-life history, not only within its catalogue but really within the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This may not be the greatest album I've ever heard, but looking over some lists of people rating the Black Sabbath catalogue, I can now say I understand their decision when it comes to placing this album so highly. Of the Tony Martin era, this is the best he had to offer to the band's timeline, and while that may not be a big deal considering he was also partly responsible for some of the worst material in the band's timeline, he certainly didn't go down without putting up one hell of a fight. Tony Martin had the biggest disadvantage when it came to this album. It's like he was against Muhammad Ali in his prime, except he had an arm tied behind his back, and he lasted a full 5 rounds. Kudos to you, Tony Martin. You deserve far more credit than you are due. Heavy metal. What a genre. So loud and abrasive, so fast and exciting. It sits on the edge, and yet over time has drifted into mainstream. Tony Martin is certainly an underrated and underappreciated musician, but he hasn't let any of that get the better of him. Tony still releases music to this day, and in fact, even released a solo album called Thorns in January of 2022. He maintains a following on Facebook, posting things several times a day, and seems to have a bit of a cult following. It's a shame this era of Black Sabbath is relatively lost. I would love to see these albums brought to streaming services to allow for easier access and hopefully for more people to consume. One of the biggest reasons I never really got into this era was because of this reason. There are talks of bringing these albums to streaming services, but that has been in the works for a few years now, and word is, Tony Iommi might have some reason for this, so don't hold your breath anytime soon for it to come out, but here's to hoping at least. Well, I hope that you enjoyed this episode of Retro Review. This took a lot longer than I expected to release, so John, again, I am sorry for the delay, but this one's for you, mate. Thanks for the suggestion, and please subscribe to this small channel if you enjoyed the video, or if you haven't already. Every sub helps my fragile ego as a content creator. Make sure you have a great day and stay spicy out there. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Live Listen Erased. And if you have enjoyed this episode, make sure you share it with all your friends. Don't forget to subscribe to our Chili Con Carnage crew so you can get notified for all the future videos that we put out, as we put out videos every Friday. Also, we are on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter over at Live Listen Erased, so make sure to tune in over there. And don't forget to like this video so that our manager can stay very happy.